So, Peter, you were Suzuka 89. You were right in the middle of all of that that we were watching at the other end of a TV set, but you were right there in the garage with it all as it unfolded during the race.
It was quite a tense time, and I think you get the feeling of history in the making sometimes, and so often that's happened in Suzuka. The championship was depending on it, and the weird thing was is that the championship back in those days, it wasn't on how many points you had, it was your best score. So you'd have 16 races, but only your best 10 or 12. I remember sitting in the motorhome a number of times just trying to do the maths to work out who you're going to do it. Because actually, I think it was 89, Prost had more points than Ayrton had. But when you did his best number, the best numbers of results is that Ayrton was better. But it was one of those events that you knew something was going to happen, because, two bulls in a ring, there's going to be action or whatever, and that came towards the end of the race when Ayrton was challenging for the lead, because Suzuka is a fairly narrow circuit. It's a fantastic circuit. It's one of the real one of the old school, long way towards me. It might be dangerous, but then motor racing is dangerous. But it is, with the cars, they're relatively safe. But I think going into the event, you could see Ayrton was challenging, Prost was coming in, and they both didn't have enough room between the two, so they both spun off. Oh yes. So when the cars, so what the rule was, or the interpretation that the FIA had, is that if a car should go off the circuit and it was going to rejoin, it had to rejoin at the point that it went off. Now that was open to debate. But what had happened? Ayrton, Alan had stopped, was immovable on the grid, and that he thought that was it. I've won the championship. I'm going to be that. That's it's over. Ayrton was determined. He was going to get going, and he's waving the marshals to get him onto the track. Again, that was open to interpretation. But his rule was, well, you've got to give it a go. If you don't give it a go, then you don't know what the outcome's going to be, and he. The answer was that the car was in a dangerous position, so it had to be moved. That was the argument, whatever. And he went on further down the road. Anyway, he went set off. His nose was slightly askew. Came into the pits, and I was actually in the pits at the time. And that's actually history in the making. And only pit stops even then were quick. I mean, they were phenomenally quick now, but even so, to get it right, they were very quick. They replaced the nose, out he went, and he caught up Alessandro Nannini, and took to take the point. Now, you can look at it. The Senna film had all different interpretations, whether there was a French influence. One the scandals. I mean, that's half of what all the magic is, I suppose, about Formula One. Their contention was he went off. He didn't come back onto the track where he went off. We came back that night from Suzuka, and in those days, there was a restriction on Russian airspace, so you had to fly effectively to Alaska. And then fly from Alaska down to London, which added another as such. And we put together, we being McLaren, put together a presentation, which we took to the Penta Hotel at Heathrow, and then virtually got back on the plane and went out to Adelaide and did that presentation to the press and the media in Australia. And it showed. Showed some of the thinking that, in actual fact, although there's this way about how you come off, you've got to get on where you came off. This had been changed at a number of different places in the past. So, and doing it quite comically as such as well. And Ron had a good way of doing it. But it's sort of about being in the firing line. You saw the tape and said, "Ron, we're going to rewind this." No, it's been all right. Of course, it gets to the actual day when we're doing it, and of course, who gets the blame for what in the right places? Sorry, I had to do that. Okay, fine.
Oh, dear.
So we did that as part of the presentation for that. But that led on, and just go back about the importance of the team and things that actually happened. Was Imola in 1994 with the San Marino Grand Prix. And Imola had always been, it was the first Grand Prix I actually went to after the UK. And it's a nice relax. It's a nice way of going into the season. And this in 94, it had gone to Williams. In fact, he still turned up in the McLaren garage every once in a while. And it was one of those weekends where it was almost like some dark force descended, and all there hadn't been a death or an injury in Formula One racing wise for some 12 years. I think it was Paletti. And on the Wednesday or Thursday, we had a sponsor taken ill to hospital with some stomach rubs. On the Friday, Rubens Barrichello went off the circuit, and we see the footage. This car literally flew into the barrier, and he broke his wrist. Yeah, he did it. And then on the Saturday, there's the sad thing with Roland Ratzenberger when he was killed. I mean, a very eerie crash, and the fact because when after he hit, the engine stopped, and he was just slumped in the cockpit. And he's a lovely guy because I met him. Because of the Austrian group, the Tag Heuer, he was a nice, lovely guy. Then on the race day, and then I'll go back one stage. I remember in the hotel we used to stay in a little hotel just outside of the Imola. It was a family hotel. We stayed there, and then Ayrton had stayed there, and then the Williams guys did. And I remember he had a Renault Espace, and watching him drive that out around on the hotel car park, and he wasn't happy about various things that weekend, and also he's Ayrton at the beginning of the race weekend was open, and he gradually as the weekend went on, he became more and more and more on his focus until he was actually sitting on the grid, helmet on, visor up, wouldn't let him interfere, and the one at Imola. He was out when he was talking. He was doing different things. It was a different and to feeling about it.
For that race, what did the safety car come out for?
Safety car. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was 94. That was 94. Yes, they started earlier. What had happened? Come back to now. They started the race, and there was an act. No, the start of the race. There was an accident on the grid, and I think there was Pedro Lamy went into the back, or he was hit under the back, which meant the wheel, one of the wheels and tires, went into the crowd, which injured. That's what brought the safety car out because they were clearing the debris, and then the safety car was I won't say a run of the mill fail, but it wasn't much more than that, and it was just going so slow, and those sort of things. And then, of course, a racing car, Formula One car, needs as much speed as it potentially has because of the aerodynamics and whatever. And they were trying to push to go a bit faster. I think after Ayrton would been suspicious about what might have been happening at Benetton, there were various doubts as to the legality of the car. We won't go into that because there's plenty been written about it, but there was suspicion about it. And he knew that, he was frustrated because he hadn't had any results as such there. So he now had to push. So he made the attempt, and he was driving. Whether he was driving over the odds, I don't know. Who knows? There's lots of things in the books that tell him about it. Bottom line was he went off and he hit the barrier to stop the race. We had Jonathan Palmer was our test driver that year, and did a lot of the work on the F1 road car. But he used to come to the paddock club, and in typical Jonathan would ask a question. Jonathan would answer it, and then It gives the drivers a chance to chat a bit more about it. But he, of course, Jonathan was a doctor and then actually practiced with a doctor. And then he went through in detail just to explain to the people in hospitality about what was going on. And and no one, you won't find many racing drivers who have actually died at an Italian circuit. Because if he did, you'd have to slow the race down. So he was taken away, and then they were saying that he passed away. But then they restarted the race, and there was a pit stop, and one of the wheels went off on one of the teams and injured a mechanic. They finally got to the end of the race. We went on a charter flight that went into Bologna, which had most of the race team, and they put all the McLaren people, all the Williams people at the front out of the way because, the way luck was going, you wanted to make sure that the plane got there as well. Coming out of the following day, the Pacific, which was the Pacific racing team, they were going through the Mont Blanc tunnel and the transporter caught fire. 2 weeks later was the Monaco Grand Prix, and first practice they went out and rode. Ben Wendlinger went off, and there was this eerie, deathly silence that went right over the circuit. And then you thought, "Go, thank God! I hope nothing's actually happened because it would have been the fitting thing." But it's just like 12 years of bad luck all came together. Pretty much the same sort of time. Can never forget. And also the kindness of people to get over that, because I think with a lot of those drivers, you get to know them. Okay, they're gods in people's eyes or whatever, but they're also humans, and you get to know them. And it's like a member of your family dying and that sort of thing. So. I assume something about it. I was talking about some of the pranks that the drivers did. So, if they all went on Gerhard's boat and the various VIPs would put their shoes in the back on the basket on the back, including Ron's, so Gerhard would sort of send them off into the water to the end. They were going to Monza once when Gerhard was trying to get hold of Ayrton's briefcase to empty it as they were flying in. He couldn't get the case open, so he threw the suitcase or the briefcase out into the crowds. Ayrton came to the factory once, and he did a they did Ron did a practice presentation did a presentation to the staff, and they gave him his briefcase back. But it was in a like in a cell, a prison. So it was all these little bars, with his tickets, and everything was locked in there. And then the other one was Gerhard was it was another Gerhard. He got hold of it and passport. And this is hearsay. I have to say that I can't relate to exactly the accuracy of these, but they managed to take the picture part of the passport, cut it out and replaced it with some saucy pictures, shall we just say. And of course they had to go through Argentina to get back to Brazil. I don't know how they talked their way through that, but they did get their own back on Gerhard once because they managed to get hold of his credit cards and they drilled a hole in it and put a bolt through it, so all his credit cards were messed up. They relented. They did everything at a certain speed. But it was, and actually, just to have Gerhard in the, he made Ayrton made him laugh, made him well, that sort of thing. It was one, they had a drinking contest, I think. I don't know, it was a contest. Whatever, they got onto Dimple whiskey. No, that was distinctly bottled. Gerhard had managed to, because the colour is rather like tea. So he had tea in his, but Ayrton had the whiskey. and had rather a lot of it, and was not very terribly well afterwards. But they did, they had they were fun times, and that was. And I think there's this Facebook page for McLaren old boys and girls, and I think those are the special times. I mean, I can't talk for what it must be like now, but I think though that particular time of your life when you become involved in racing, you're probably the same, Gary. The special days, and I think that was captured it very well.
So, do you want to talk a little bit about a little bit later on, sort of 95, 96, Peter?
Yeah, sure.
Because that was sort of when did I can't remember now. When did McLaren start with Mercedes?
95.
Was it 95?
Was a certain Nigel Mansell was the driver, and his hips were 6 inches wider than Mika's, because the car was designed based around David Coulthard and Mika, and their bodies was
Yeah,
so
and you had
really
the
marked.
Science Museum.
Science Museum was the first one.
So, I mean, Nigel didn't last very long, did he? Was it two races, I think? Two or three races?
Two, I think.
Yeah, I think it was, didn't
Yes, he
And obviously,
used to
Mark.
sing in the car.
Yeah,
He
I've heard
used
that.
to
I've
sing
heard
in
that.
the car. Yeah, and let's put it this: I think it was reached through to a because he was there because of Marlborough. The big thing, it was Marlborough money that was behind it. Ron would never wasn't that keen. Sorry, I'm just transpiring, thinking what some of the stories I'm thinking of whether I should say them or not.
Ah, yes, fair enough.
But
Anyway.
then we, so the 95 was the Science Museum, which was fairly low key, but it was quite a good one. And then we get to the launch of the West Marlborough McLaren racing team, which was. And we had to do something really big, because I think McLaren had been red and white for I don't know 14, 15, 20 odd years or whatever, and it went to silver. So we had to make a big statement about it. So a lot of work went into the branding of it. So why was it West McLaren Mercedes? And we had what was interesting was the guy was a guy called Dieter Weng was the big man at West, because no one really knew what West was. They were a small cigarette company, but they were part of a much bigger conglomerate. And we did this. We went. I don't remember why we did this, but we were on a barge on the Thames doing a things, to, a consultation as to what the brand was going to be from our West Marlborough Saints. And you had, if you imagine the three, you got West, McLaren, Mercedes. So you had to picture a character who epitomized the brand. So for West, they had Mel C, was a bit avant-garde, whatever. And McLaren, typically it would be James Bond. And Mercedes was going to be what was then the German Chancellor, the big guy. I can't remember his name now, but that's what they're trying to do. Interestingly, over a period of time, what changed? The wackiness of West became less, and the wackiness of Mercedes became more to balance it out. So we've got the new brand. How are we going to promote it? Well, we're sitting in a consultation meeting at McLaren to discuss it. And we were talking about, and they had the visions of ZZ Top on an aircraft carrier floating in the Mediterranean was one. That's a good
Yeah,
idea.
that's not a bad idea.
And then someone said, I suppose we could always get the Spice Girls. Someone then bagged, that's a good idea. And it was that was what led to it. So they got on to the guy that was behind the management of the Spice Girls. He's in his element. It's like dealing with when he's doing parties and nightclubs and whatever. I've got this deal for you. So we created the Spice Girls, We were at the Alexandra Palace because McLaren had had a we had a party there. One of our we put a funfair in for celebration. So we knew the that it was very, very ambitious. It was to blow it away. So I think the guest list was about 5,000, and it was split into three areas. You had the VIPs, you had the public, and then you had the media as such, and they're all in different things. So the Spice Girls only sang, well, they didn't sing, they lip synced. For one element of it. So they did the unveil, which was one of these Malik someone, I think the name was the name of the guy. They did an appearance. So they did all these. Imagine highlight Starlight Express or on roller. It was a bit like that on roller skates, and then eventually they grab this big curtain which they whip off, and then the cars unveiled afterwards. And he had Davina McCall, who was in her very early days. She was an MTV producer. She was asked to just talk for about, I don't know, just over a minute or two, and couldn't do it that sort of way. And she got on the stage. They were raunchy, the girls, I suppose. Then if you look at the pictures, you see that some of the Micah and David's, the overalls were a bit maladjusted afterwards, from what. And then they did so. Then they did that. Oh, and then they had Jamiroquai as the rock act. Unfortunately, the poor guy didn't have that many people watching as such because they'd all disappeared. But it was about doing something revolutionary. What actually became really enforced it is that weekend, Spice Girls went to number one in America. So it was all like all these sort of things. You claim that it was inspirational. You know, it's just being in the right place at the right time.
Of course, exactly. That's right.
So that's when we went to that, and they had West had a different philosophy. In fact, I think they won. They did 1997. I can't remember how many races they won. In 1998, was Mika won the world championship, and then he repeated that in 1999. And Mika was great. Mika was I used to interview him for things for the Paddock Club. And the thing is, after you've been interviewing the same driver every race, it gets a bit much, so you open it up. But the one thing about Mika, whereas David was very much Mr. Corporate, he loosened up progressively, but he was one of the Jackie Stewart school of
Yeah,
charm.
exactly.
So
That's right.
I have one recollection, I think, with David. There was two. They used to have some the puppets, spitting image puppets, and they had one of Nicker and David. The David one looked very, very conscious, and it had, what David had is this very square jaw that was like character. I remember interviewing him, and I was in the microphone. And he was answering, and I sort of my brain was saying, "You sure you got the right David Coulthard? You haven't got the puppet," because the difference was so significant. And then there was, and then in Japan, there's we always used to ask questions about the season as it was going on, and like I said, the first time, and he's done a translation, and the Japanese are very straight and very correct and that sort of thing. David, what's your, what's the high point of your year? And after your championship going on, I said, well, actually, the most exciting thing for me was going back to the bedroom with my girlfriend.
How
Ah,
did they translate
how do I get out of this one? So the following year, David. I'm going to ask you a question. I did it last year, but what's been the highlight of the year? So, without talking about your sex life, what's the year? But Mika was great. I mean, he used to enthuse things, and then he used to take the piss out of me quite a lot. But then that's sort of the fun end of it. And in fact, The Cirque, no, something. The Cirque du Soleil. The exit I had when I went off stage after interviewing them is one of the clown characters came up, picked me up over, shoved it over my shoulder, and took me out. But I remember his quote, Mika's quote, the final one, because that was his final Grand Prix win in America. It's my last race. Mika, well, what's your expectation? What's your strategy for the race? Said, well, at the start, I'm going to get to the corner first, and I'm going to stay there to the end of the race. And that's what he did. And then, but the Mika was like that. You know, you had to get to know him, but he was a special guy. Martin Brundle also was fun, because he joined us after Ayrton had disappeared, and he turned up with his Marlboro cap on, and no one ever wore Marlboro caps in those days. And he said, "Oh, I quite like doing these PR stunts." And you think, well, you had 3 years of, no, I'm not going to do this. He had someone who was willing and keen to do it. But those days, special days.
Excellent. Okay, Peter, I think we'll wrap it up now, if that's okay with you.
Can I just say a little bit about what I've been doing what I'm doing now?
Yes, of course, absolutely.
Anything, because it's a bit dear to my heart. If you could put it separate after, because I after McLaren I went to the Motorsport Association for a year, and we did Motorsport National Motorsport Week, and I was in Dubai for 2 years as the circuit manager. I also went across, was in Asia, Singapore and Malaysia, and we did some work with Alex Yung, the racing driver. He was the Malaysian driver. He was exceptionally good. But what from a health point of view, I started to feel something wasn't quite right. So finally went to the doctors. I got well, sorry, did I had one of those, all these tests, and they said, well, you're like a 60-year-old. Well, that's quite good, because I was. But then I went to a neurologist, and instead of so various factors that have been going on, and he said, I was diagnosed with Parkinson's, which was, I've been suspecting it for quite a while, but it's still quite a shock when it happens. Anyway, that was when I was in Malaysia. I moved back to the UK, and I was looking for someone to do exercise and look after. And there was a lady that did a physiotherapist. Bottom line was, we started to do training with her. And she did an open day about talking the effects, because what a lot of things are, you don't, he said, the reaction, you don't like to tell people, not because you're worried about it, you're more worried about the effect that people go, oh dear, I'm sorry about it. You get past that. So I was asked to do something connected to, what's it like to be diagnosed, which it was. And I had to, you can edit this bit out if you like, but I had to do an introduction. And we just had one of the societies have been doing a long-winded, slightly boring society. So I thought, I've got to shake this up. So I had to relate a story told to me by my mother when she was in her 80s. And there's two an old couple lying in bed. And he said, the man says to her, Mildred, I've got something to tell you. What's that, Harold? I found someone else. You found someone else. Why, what does she do that I don't do? She holds my willy. I hold your willy. Ah, she's got Parkinson's. And with that, they all broke down and started laughing. And it just, I was sorry to see your reaction there. It's how you use humor to the bottom line is, from that, we decided that we had to do something. So the reality was, we did, to raise funds, we swam across or swam across the Solent. So we swam the Gosport across to Ryde on the Isle of Wight, 12 versted. It's 3 miles, 3 to 4 miles. And you swim across one of the busiest shipping tunnels, shipping, which was quite an experience. And we each had a park kayaker. So I remember holding on to this kayak, watching this bloody great big boat come up and down. And we ran, well, we raised over £47,000.
Well, that's not bad, was it? So when you were swimming, Peter, you take it in turns. You do a certain amount of.
No, that we you're getting ahead of yourself. I'll tell you that in a minute. No, that was all of us. And what it was the we won't call it a charity, the movement we did it. It was called Pure Parkinson's, because, well, sorry, beg your pardon, Positively Parkinson's. We're raising the money for Cure Parkinson's, but it's Positive Parkinson's, because what it is about the positivity that goes with it. And this is where a motorsport has a very direct link, because you have a big shunt, you go off, and you think, God, if you were in that in a road car, you'd be traumatized for a long time and all that sort of thing. You've got the words, you can't change the past, but you can change the future, and you can live in the now. And it's getting people. When people become diagnosed, they don't really know where to go. So it's creating that sort of positivity that goes with it. So what we're doing this year, and this is what we are doing, the relay, we're going to swim around the Isle of Wight, 65 miles. We're doing as a relay, and we're doing another thing. We've got guys that are going to cycle from John O'Groats to Land's End. We're doing a hike up Snowdonia, and it's all the positive. But what I suppose I would say is that it's the positivity that comes with it, and
Yeah.
it's great. So we have
So which
a
one of
boat.
those are you doing?
Pardon? I was doing the swim. Doing the swim. No, I'm not going to do the swim. On a good day, 24 hours. On a bad day, 36, probably, because of the tides. Usually, you have one of rather large boats that stay nearby, and then you have a kayaker with you, because that allows you to get into closer to the shore. The reason with I got involved was, A, the positivity. And years when I was 12 years old, we did an attempt at the youngest stream to swim the channel. And we still hold the world record for the youngest team to swim the channel. We were the minimum age is 12 years, and we our average age was 12 years 4 months, and we did it in 12 hours 45 minutes.
That's not bad at all, is it? Dear,
No,
dear.
that was impressive. For that year, there was happened to be a bunch of kids that were all quite good, so that's how we got into doing this sort of thing. But motorsport gives you strength, and we're very privileged to become involved, and I think we all are. And that's where we're talking to Sally at the Grand Prix Trust, because where the thing is that if someone is diagnosed, life doesn't stop. You go on. You just do it slightly differently.